We're doing Ein Yaakov, we're up to page Mem Aleph in the regular editions, page Peches in the Gemara. And the Gemara had been analyzing Psukim in Shir HaShirim, verses in the Song of Songs. And we're continuing with that line of thought. V'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, who is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is one of the people, one of the Amoraim, who actually went into the Garden of Eden alive. Right? He tricked the angel of death. What?
He never went back on his word.
Right? He never went back on his word. V'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, my dichtiv. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, what does the verse indicate when it says, Lechayav ka'ugot abusim? It's the description of the beloved man. So that's the woman describing the man, which is the people of Israel describing Hashem's treatment of them. And so the description is, Lechayav ka'arugot habosem. His cheeks are like rose, arugot, or rose. Ordinarily, aruga is a row in a garden. Lechayav, his cheeks are ka'arugot habosem. They're like rows of plants that are perfume, rows of perfumes. So his cheeks, lechayav, his cheeks are like rows of perfume plants growing.
Row,
yeah. Kol dibur v'dibur sheyatza mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every time Hashem said something, every time there was a declaration from above, nitmale kol haolam kulo besamim. The world became filled with a beautiful smell. Every time Hashem said one of the commandments, so then the world filled with perfume, filled with good smell. So the people needed this. When do we smell a good smell? On Matzei Shabbos, when our soul is overwhelmed. So the people receiving the Ten Commandments were overwhelmed. So every time Hashem gave a commandment, so he also gave the support, that good smell, whatever that means. I don't know what it means on Matzei Shabbos either. That smelling a good smell rejuvenates us, even though we're troubled.
The second soul is leaving.
Right, but why does a good smell help us? Maybe we should eat a good pizza.
How you comfort the soul, the only comfort the soul, not by food, but by smell. Smell is the only thing who comforts the soul.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, you just opened up a whole bunch of stuff here. Okay, first question, if I may.
I'm listening.
Rav Micha just said that the Midrash says that Am Yisrael died like when Hashem said a word. So maybe it's like when the doctor cracks that thing in your nose, it wakes you back up. That's like Bosem wakes you back up. And now another thing you ask, why Bosem? I'm sure you know the answer, but I heard from my Rebbe that the Bosem is the only thing, the only chush that was not, the only sense that was not part of Chet Adam and Chava. And it's also, he says, even the Egyptians that pull the brain out of the nose. So we see that the smell has a straight connection to whatever's going on up here.
Okay, yafeh. So every time one of the commandments were said, so a great smell filled the world. So the Gemara asks, V'chevan shem dibur rishon nitmala, after the first commandment, the world was filled with a good smell. So then what do I need a second dose of perfume with the second commandment? Okay, that sounds like a funny question. So the Gemara gives an interesting answer. A breeze came out and caused the first smell to dissipate, and then a second smell would come in, or a second time. I don't know if there were different smells. Shnamar's, the verse says, Siftotav shoshanim notefot moravir. His lips are like the petals of a rose. They're beautifully red, and they are dripping with the beautiful perfume called mor. So that's a description of the lips. So, al tikri shoshanim, the word shoshanim, his lips are like petals of a rose, but rather sheshonim, his lips, as they tell over the words of Torah, so they give off this perfume. Okay, so if this medrash, you understand that I don't. Why do I care? Why is it important? Why do I need different smells? Why does every commandment have to give me a good smell? So why is there a breeze and then another good smell? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
No, she. No, she. That. Shonim. That learn. So, if we're going to go with the interpretation that every time they died with every commandment, they lost their soul, and then they needed a rejuvenation. So I can understand that you need a new smell, because if you're used to the old smell, then you need a new rejuvenation. It would also seem that on some level, every commandment touched us in a different way. Because after we handled the first commandment, Anuchi Hashem Elokecha, we were rejuvenated, the second commandment still knocked us off our feet. So that would sound like every commandment touches a different part of our personality. And every commandment in a different way is something hard to contend with. In a different way, every commandment's different. Honor your parents, do not covet, do not steal. So they're each touching a different chord within our soul, and so they each need a different perfume to bring us back. But it could also be an indication that the Gemara says you cannot acquire Torah until you kill yourself over it. Torah requires a dedication. And so each commandment would knock us off our feet, so to speak. The people needed, call it that perfume, call it that trauma. They needed to undergo a certain dedication for each commandment. It's not a one-shot deal. I'm dedicating myself to learn Torah, so now it's going to work. No, certain forms of learning, you're going to learn some things that'll knock you off your feet one way, and then you'll learn other things that'll knock you off your feet another way. And so each commandment had its own nature and how it affected us and how we had to be dedicated in order to accept it. Rabbi Yeshua ben Nevi, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi taught us another thing. Every commandment that emanated from the mouth of the Holy One, blessed be He, Yatzetan nishmatan shel Yisrael. The soul of Israel left them with every commandment they heard. Shenemaz, the verse says, Nafshi yatzea v'daberu. My soul left as he spoke. So in the Shira Shirim, that sounds like the woman is very excited. I was breathless. And when he spoke, every word he uttered, I dropped dead. Okay, it sounds melodramatic. And the Gemara is telling us, no, it's literal. So if they lost their souls with the first commandment, how'd they ever receive the second commandment? So Hashem brought down the dew that will be the resurrection of the dead, and with that Hashem gave them life again, as the verse says. Now, whatever that means. So that's the second thing Rabbi Shua ben Levi is teaching us. See, these psukim have other interpretations in Chazal. The pasuk Siftotav Shoshanim Notefot Morover, his lips are like the petals of a rose. They're dripping with this beautiful perfume. So we learned earlier in the Gemara, a year or two ago, the Gemara gave another interpretation that Siftotav Sheshonim, when one's lips are learning Torah, Notefot Morover, they should be dripping with bitterness. Why bitterness? We could be friends, we could be joking. The rabbi and his students can be joking as an intro to the learning. The minute it starts getting serious, you're learning seriously, so then it's a fire. War is on. There's no friendship. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Where does the truth lie? And suddenly it becomes very serious. We're fighting for the truth. And that's why in learning we say the intro is gentle and sweet. Once a person gets into things, after the first 2 minutes of class, It's supposed to be very serious. It's supposed to be like something morover, like something bitter. It's not something you could joke about. It's something you're supposed to take seriously. The question is, if that derivation works in with this derivation, that it could be the Torah once it was so serious, meaning the pleasantness leading up to Mount Sinai was great, but then suddenly it's Hashem says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha.
Get serious.
Yeah. Final quote from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi on this. Every time Hashem said a commandment, the Jews would leap back 12 miles. They'd hear a commandment and they'd run back. They'd take a flying leap 12 miles back. And the angels would come and support them back the way you support a little child when it's walking. You give it two hands and it goes one foot and the next foot. So too, we would groggily be walking back those 12 miles to hear the next commandment. Shneimar malachei tzevakot yedodun yedodun al tikri yedodun ela yedadun. Okay, that verse tells us they will walk them back like little children. We have another quote from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi taught a lot of halacha. He also taught a lot of agada. When Moshe ascended to the heavens, the angel said before God, why is the mortal, the one who's born from a woman, what's he doing up here? So Hashem said, he's come up to receive the Torah. You have this cherished treasure that you've been hiding for 974 generations before creation. Kodem shenivra olam. 974 generations before creation. That's what our tradition is. The Torah was created. Mevakesh litna levasar v'dam. Now you're going to give it to flesh and blood. Ma'enosh kitizkirenu v'nadam kitifkidenu. What is the human worth? Why would you give him such a treasure? Hashem Adonai, Ma'adir Shimcha B'chol Ha'aretz, Asher Etna Otcha L'Shamayim. Hashem, our Master, you are filled with glory. You belong up here with angels. Why would you want to go down to be among men? Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Achzer Lehem Tshuva. So Hashem tells Moshe, answer them. Amar lo Vanav. So Moshe, Hashem tells him, answer them. He says, Ribono Shel Olam Mitirani Shema Yisrafuni Be'Evel Shebefihem. He says, I'm scared. It could be they'll talk to me and they'll burn me to pieces. By just talking to me. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm scared to answer them. So Hashem says, hold on to my throne and give them an answer. Hold on to my throne and then you'll give them an answer. Okay, so how does any of this make sense? Moshe is scared. Hashem's going to let the angels burn him. He holds on to the throne. The throne is a physical thing. Hold on to the throne, and then give them an answer. Why does Moshe have to answer? Shneimar, the verse says, "Maches pnei chise parshes alav anano." Amar binachum lamed shepires shakai miziv shchina tov anano alav. So Hashem spread from the glory of His shchina and His cloud over Moshe. Amar lefanav ribono shlam tura shata noteni maktiv ma. So now Moshe is supposed to answer. What does he do? He turns to Hashem. He says, "The Torah you're going to give me. What does it say in the Torah?" He's brought Hashem back into the picture. Hashem throws Moshe in front of the angels. Moshe comes back to Hashem and says, Ribon Shom, what's going to be in that Torah? So he says, it says in the Torah, Anachi Hashem Lokecha Asher Tziticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. Amar lehem, leMitzrayim yiratem, leFaro yishtabtem. Have you gone down to Egypt? Moshe asked the angels. Have you been subservient to Pharaoh? Torah lema tehei lachem. So then why should the Torah be yours? No answer. No answer. So, Shuv Maktiv Ba. Moshe asks Hashem again, what else does it say in the Torah? Lo yeh lecha elokim acherim. Don't have other gods. Don't believe in anyone else. So Moshe asks the angels, Ben avdei kochavim atem shruim, shavdin avodat kochavim, are your neighbors pagans? Are you living among pagans? Shuv Maktiv Ba. Moshe asks Hashem, what else does it say in the Torah? Zachot yom Shabbat lekadosho. Remember to designate the day of Shabbos as a day of holiness. Moshe asked them, you work all week, Do you need to rest on Shabbos? Shuv Maktivba. What else does it say in the Torah? Lotisa. Don't take Hashem's name in vain. Don't swear falsely. So Moshe asked the angels, Masal Matanyish Benchem, you guys do business up here? What does that mean? Don't swear falsely. Shuv Maktivba. What else does it say in the Torah? Kabedet Avicha Vetimecha. Honor your father and mother. Moshe asked them, Aveim Yesh Lachem. You have a mom and dad? Shuv Maktiv Ba. Moshe asked Hashem, what else does it say? Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tinaf, Lo Tignov. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Kina Yesh Benechem. Are you guys jealous of one another? Yetzerara Yesh Benechem. Do you have any desire to do evil? So these are Moshe's questions. Tom? So, Hashem told him, hold on to my throne. And Moshe asks Hashem the questions. And Hashem feeds him the answers, which have room to question the angels. So obviously we need to ask, what were the angels thinking? What was Hashem saying? And what was Moshe saying? Okay, but first Bini. Yeah.
I understood the Gemara the complete opposite. That Moshe already heard the Ten Commandments. He doesn't need to ask God for them again. I understood that he was asking the angels rhetorically.
But the Gemara says he said to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's asking rhetorically. He's refuting the angels. He asks Hashem, what does it say? And then he takes what...
He already heard the commandments.
They need to hear.
He already heard...
He knows them, right?
You're saying, why did he ask Hashem?
Right. The angels hear from Hashem's mouth that it's this.
Okay, so you're questioning why did he have to ask Hashem, what does it say in the Torah, right? That's your question. Okay. Okay, let's see. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Where was the Torah before it came to the Jewish people? It sounds like it was in heaven, right? What is the Torah doing in heaven? What does that mean, the Torah is in heaven? What does that mean, there's a Torah in heaven? Hashem says, take it down and give it to man.
Yeah.
So let's ask another question. Why does Hashem care? What does that mean, that Hashem, who is holy and above anything mortal, what does it mean, Hashem tells us, shake a lulav? Okay, we're going to take a bat and a ball and do this. And we're going to say that's going to make it rain. No, okay, so it's not a bat and a ball. It's a branch and a pomegranate. Oh, no, it's not a pomegranate. It's a branch and a citron. And that matters. And what would happen if I took a lemon? And what would happen if I took a broom?
No, rain would be the same thing.
So Hashem says, no, you take that palm branch, you take that citron. Why? Where's the logic in that?
It's a rain dance.
It's a rain dance. Okay. Fine. The Rishonim discuss it about korbanos, but we saw in the Ran that the question expands. So Hashem tells us, eat matzah on Pesach. Hashem cares if I eat bread or matzah. What difference does it make to him? But what does that mean that Hashem gives us commandments? Let's ask a different question. As the Navi writes, when we do a mitzvah, so we made Hashem happy. Hashem's like a father in heaven. Ah, we made him happy. Or, there's something else going on here. What is the Torah that's in heaven? Why is there a Torah before the Jewish people have to receive a Torah? What's the point of the Torah existing before the world? What's the point of the Torah sitting up there in heaven until it comes down to the Jewish people? Okay, I'm with you.
The world without Amisa.
Okay, but that's another good question. You're right. Yeah?
Rav Alex, he likes to point on that to say that Torah was a blueprint how to create. How to make creation.
So that, that's a Gemara.
House, yeah.
Fine. Why? And more than that,
the house,
Hashem needs
that's a an aspect of Torah. There's an aspect that Torah is not the product of the world. The world is the product of Torah. Fine. But I'm saying, when you look in Torah, what you're seeing is Hashem says, I want you to do something a certain way. And that needs definition. Ordinarily, we discuss this when it comes to the Mishkan. In this week's Parsha, Hashem says, make this cover this color, make that cover that color. Here's what I want you to do. And you have to look at it and say, why does it matter? What would happen if I did different? What's the big deal of making the Aron with gold? And if I made it with silver, it would be less good. Why? Hashem cares? What does that mean that Hashem tells me, make me my house this way? This is my house, this is how I want it. Okay, why do you care? Meaning, I told someone yesterday that when we got married, I didn't go see the hall. I saw the hall the first time on the day of the wedding. Because why does it matter to me? If it matters to my wife, if it matters to my parents, if it matters to her parents, whatever they want is fine by me. Do I care? If it's halachically okay, I don't care. I don't care if it's a bigger hall or a smaller hall or whatever, if it's fancy or less fancy. Why does it matter? Who cares? Why does it matter? I'd rather spend the time learning Torah. That there's important things to do in this world. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us instructions about how to build a Mishkan. And that's where we start saying, well, it's Kabbalistic. It's not the way you think. And we can have the interpretations of Maimonides about what, and the Sephorno and others, what each item represents philosophically. But then you leave the Mishkan and you say, wait, what about every other mitzvah? The Mishkan, you recognize there's something Kabbalistic going on. What about every other mitzvah? Putting on tefillin. It matters if it's black. What difference does it make? So Hashem tells me to do things a certain way. I have to have a specific parchment when I write my tefillin. I have to have a specific parchment when I write my mezuzah. I have to have a specific order how I write the parasha. So now the question becomes, are the mitzvos only the way I see them? Let's take an example. You have a big puddle. I don't know if you guys did this as a kid. You throw a pebble in the puddle. What happens? There's a ripple effect, right? Mm-hmm. You see, circle, broader circle, broader circle. And then slowly the effect of the pebble dissipates. You stand by the pond, same thing, right? So as a kid, you try to throw a big rock, and you want to see big waves, right? You want to see a large ripple effect. We say that Torah and mitzvot have a ripple effect on the whole world. So when there's the famous line that if a Jew is careful from saying Lashon Hara in one country, then another Jew on the other side of the world will have an easier time keeping Shabbos. What's the connection? I'm here, he's there. So we're taught that the mitzvot affect the world on a different level than just what we see. And where I'm headed is that I think you have to say that. You have to say there's something greater than what meets the eye. If what meets the eye is I'm going to take a palm branch and a citron and myrtle branches, I'm going to shake them all together, now what did I do? But if I say no, the Ribbono Shel Olam created it, there's a higher concept here. There's something greater than what we recognize with every mitzvah that we do. That's the idea that the Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim of Elazhin, writes. He writes a scary concept. He says, the mind that we were given is the Holy of Holies. You think the Holy of Holies is on the Temple Mount, right? You should know the Holy of Holies is right here. The way we use our mind, that's the Holy of Holies. And a person who misuses his mind is desecrating the name of Hashem more than a person, more than Titus, who took a woman of ill repute into the Holy of Holies. What Titus did was the greatest defilement in the world. No, don't think so. You should know that what's happening in our own minds carries a greater weight than what Titus did. Titus did something in the physical world. Our mind affects the spiritual world. So now we are introduced to a concept that every mitzvah has a spiritual component. So people can get carried away with this, right? You can have people...
Oh, no!
Right. Oh no, I had a bad thought. Now I just destroyed the Holy of Holies. I'm worse than Titus, right? So obviously there's a certain balance, but there's a perspective. The mitzvot are a physical manifestation of a spiritual concept. And the Gemara repeatedly warns us, don't get carried away with this. You can easily say, the most important thing is the spiritual side of the mitzvah. No, you got to do it. But it's also true that there's something much higher that's involved in every mitzvah. It's not just the act. It's how the act impacts the world. There's a spiritual concept here. It's not just the physical thing. So now let's take a step back. What do we see so far? We saw that Moshe comes up to heaven and there's a Torah there. It's a physical Torah. It's like the one we do Hagbah with, yes? That's the Torah we're talking about? No, it's not a physical Torah. So we're talking about concepts. Moshe comes up and he's supposed to be taught the Torah. The angels come in and they say, why should a human learn the Torah? They knew what it says in the Torah. What's Moshe proving them? They didn't know it says honor your father and mother. They didn't know it says I took you out of Egypt. But they knew it on a different level. If Avraham Avinu eats matzah on Pesach, then there's something about eating matzah on Pesach that makes it right even before the Jews leave Mitzrayim. We don't understand it. Even after the Jews left Mitzrayim, if the average Jew were in prison, does he sense it's Pesach? Does he know it's Pesach without having a calendar? It's said that there were very pious people that when they were in a coma in the hospital, you could see them change when Shabbos would come in. They would become different people. You'd see, they even though they had no way of knowing. I saw it with different Talmidei Chachamim who had dementia, that as they aged, they lost everything. They would look at the mirror and ask, who is that? But there were certain things that they knew. They didn't recognize their wives, but they knew Shabbos. They knew Tadavin. They couldn't remember if they washed their hands. They couldn't remember many things. They'd like look at the newspaper to check what day of the week it was. But there were things that were just a part of them. They were connected on a different level. You see that the mind's not there anymore. The person walks in and he's standing next to the light switch and asks, how do you get light in this room? And he can't remember to turn on the light switch. But Shabbos, that's a part of him. When Shabbos comes in, he won't turn on a light. It's Shabbos. Now you say, wait a second, how do you know it's Shabbos? You don't know your wife's your wife. You don't know the mirror's a mirror. You don't know the light switch's a light switch. Isn't that more elementary? No, people can connect on a different level. And they could catch it's Shabbos. So there's something else going on here. It's not just what meets the eye. And so the angels they're exposed to a Torah that's on a different level. It's the Torah that we can affect by our physical acts. But you might say, in a certain sense, it's the essence of Torah. Torah is not just the act you're doing here. It's also the impact of the act. So if the angels have a different approach to Torah, so they also know the physical aspect. But from their end, it's a spiritual Torah. It's a different Torah. Yeah.
That leads question, why would they question giving it to humans? And why would they stay quiet when Moshe does his chakira?
Let's ask another question. What do they lose if Moshe takes the Torah?
They only gain. So
why would they what do they lose? Why are they against it?
Nothing. They would only gain.
They lose the Torah.
Why can't we both have the Torah? You and I both have Torah.
It's infinite.
Lo b'shamayim hi.
Did you say the other day that there are three levels of logic? Man logic, angel logic, and the divine logic. So
yeah.
So that means it needed Moshe to be human logic to explain the angels something what they on their level
couldn't understand.
Right, yeah. But it gives us a different perspective on Torah, argument.
Yeah, for sure.
Meaning their argument to Moshe tells us the Torah that we're getting down here is Kabbalistic. Don't look at it as something Torah tells me to put on the right shoe before the left shoe. No, tie the left shoe before the right shoe. And the Torah is very involved with the mundane. No, Torah begins on a different place. And the effect of Torah is in a different place. The angels say, why would the mortals get this? They're going to ruin it. They're going to have a Torah and not observe it. We never transgress the Torah. They're going to hurt the world. Leave it up here. Leave the concepts up here. Why do they have to take it? If they are exposed to Torah, it will be a destruction of Torah. Now people will know what it says and not keep it. That's a little bit worse.
But the concept of tshuva was also created before creation.
Right.
So
right.
It's all connected.
Right. But it was important that Moshe has to contend with this. Meaning it's important for us also to see this other side. That we can approach Torah and sometimes forget that we're dealing with something much greater, much higher. The famous story of the Gra, right? The Gra was lying on his deathbed and his students asked him why he was upset. And he said, look at how easy it is to have a mitzvah. Tzitzis cost us nothing. We could have a mitzvah.
We learned on Friday, right? With Rabbi Yaakov.
Shachat, yeah. Yeah. I told you guys the story. I credit the Rebbe on this. That our five-year-old asks my wife, what's for lunch? And my wife says, sandwiches. Yeah, I told you the story, no? So he goes, yay! So my wife says, I didn't tell you what's in the sandwich. What are you getting so excited about? So he says, I'm going to make Birkas HaMazon. I'm going to do a mitzvah, Ima. So I credit his Rebbe. I'm saying he didn't get that from home. It would have been nice if he got it from home. But saying someone there got him excited. That's the same Rebbe that when he shows up without tzitzis in the morning, he says, look, you could show up to class without your pants. You can't show up without your tzitzis. If you come without your pants, I have no problem. You come without your tzitzis, how do you do that? I don't get it. So he develops in the kids a perspective. You know, it's brilliance when a Rebbe can touch a kid's soul that way. The kid goes into the bath. He tells his younger sister, you know, you're mud. She says, I'm mud? Why am I mud? He says, don't you know? You're mud and I'm mud. God took mud and made us. Other one, mud. We're both mud. Don't you know that? Right? So the Rebbe was able to make it alive for them. But he also made Birkat HaMazon alive. When we go down to dinner, how many of us are thinking about, I'm going to get to say Birkat HaMazon, right? But a five-year-old can really connect to it. We should also. The angels are telling Moshe, you're getting something amazing. The value of every mitzvah, it's a perspective we have to awaken in ourselves. The angels are jealous of us. Look at what I can do. If we valued it, how many times would we pick up our head from learning Torah? Meaning every word, we get something tremendous. Elamai, we forget this. So the angels come and they tell Moshe, what are you doing taking this? You're taking the most precious thing on the planet. It's a wake-up call. It's a perspective, yes.
So how is it that, I've asked this question before and I got answers that don't really fit into with what we're learning. How is it that we have Sephardim and Hasidim that are so connected to this idea of Kavanot and the Shevi Chut Chuchav Rechu, and then you have for the large part, not to box, but you see it that the Ashkenazim aren't connected to this Kabbalistic side as much, and like the answers I've gotten, oh, it's different, the people in the Sephardic people are more warm and they're more connected to Pnimi Yud, but it's like, okay, if this is the essence, if we know that every time we're doing a mitzvah we're changing the world, or at least we should know this. Like, how is it that the Ashkenazim are so removed from
who said that the Kavanah is what does it? Maybe the mitzvah accomplishes it, and the Kavanah is not the point. Maybe the Ashkenazim hold that the Kavanah, I have to have intention, I'm doing the will of Hashem. That's the holiest thing I can do. The Kabbalists say there are all kinds of other intentions you can have. The Ashkenazi approach is, Hashem gave me mitzvot, and when I come to do something and I say, I'm doing the will of Hashem. Why? Because Hashem told me to do it. Not the Shem Yichud, not the Shem anything. The Shem Hashem. Hashem told me, that's why I'm doing it. That's my mitzvah. That's what I'm doing. That's why I'm doing it. It doesn't have to be robotic. The L'shem Yichud, I'm saying you're taking two different concepts. A person can be warm and excited about his tefillin. The Shulchan Aruch that does not say the L'shem Yichud, right? The same Shulchan Aruch says the custom of pious people is they kiss their tefillin when they take them out. They kiss their tefillin before they put them away. There's an excitement. You know, a person after Chol HaMoed, he's had 7 days that he didn't put on his tefillin. Yeah. He should be excited. Tomorrow morning I'm going to put on my tefillin. There's an excitement. And that doesn't have to be the L'shem Yichud. The L'shem Yichud is a specific approach in Avodas Hashem, where the Ashkenazim hold that if you don't get it 100% right, then you haven't done anything positive.
What,
and that's
if
why...
If you don't have full Kavanah, then it's as if you have no Kavanah?
It's worse. That's why the Ashkenazim hold that when it comes to Kabbalistic Kavanot, only a select few who can get it right as far as what is the correct Kavanah at every point, only they should do it. And everyone else, they should work to get to that level. But the Ashkenazim hold that if you tried to have all these complicated Kavanot and you didn't get it right, then you did harm. You're worse off than had you just done the mitzvah simply. Coming back to our Ein Yaakov, and this we'll pause for Alvit. Miyad odu lo laKadosh Baruch Hu, right away the angels gave in to Hashem. They didn't give in to Moshe, because you see Hashem played along here, right? Hashem gave him the psukim that would support the argument. Shenemar, as the verse says, Hashem Adonai Madishimcha, Vilutna Otcha L'Shamayim Loktiv, the angels conceded Miyad Kol Echad V'Echad Nasa Lohev. Every one of the angels became a friend of Moshe's. When Moshe wins the argument, they're happy. They're not jealous. Okay, you won. And every angel gave him a gift. Because they put him down, they said he's a mere mortal. Now that he won them, they each gave him a gift. And even the angel of death gave him a gift. Shenemar, as the verse says, the angel of death is the one that revealed that secret, that when there's a plague, the Ktoris is what can stop the plague. That's the gift the angel of death gave to Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll pick up here. Bezat Hashem next week.